Thank you for listening to Mormon Sex Info. This episode is an archived episode and is only now becoming publicly available. Mormon Sex Info relies on contributions. To contribute, please visit mormonsex.info. And now, please enjoy this episode.
Hello and welcome to Mormon Mental Health and also a co-production with Mormon Sex Info. This is Natasha Helfer Parker, your host for this episode. And I would like to welcome Daniel Parkinson and Thomas Montgomery to the program today to talk about two articles that just recently came out. One of them called Utah's Escalating Suicide Crisis and LDS LGBTQ Despair by Daniel Parkinson, and the other one called Rejection and the Family by Thomas Montgomery. And I believe the two of you have been working together and in a sense released these on the same week.
A media blitz.
Okay.
We felt it warranted a media blitz, and this is the best we could do.
Okay.
With our powers. So.
Okay.
That's so, yeah.
This is a collaboration that's gone on for years. We've worked together and been publishing on this topic for 4 or 5 years, Daniel?
Yeah. As long as we've known each other, we have been publishing information for the public, and some of them have been very successful. But this was, in this particular case, we really, we each saw a need for a different kind of article, but we really decided to do it on the same day on purpose because we really wanted to bring attention to an issue, and we thought that was the best we could do.
Okay, so definitely a collaborative effort between the two of you, and just before we get into the material that both of you wrote about, I would like to give you both an opportunity to just introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about who you are. So, may Daniel, why don't you go first, and then Tom, you can follow.
Yeah, my name is Daniel Parkinson. I'm a psychiatrist in St. Paul, Minnesota. I was raised Mormon, and I haven't been involved in the church since shortly after my mission, and partly at that time because of just issues about belief, but also because I was gay. But I came back to activism with the LGBT LDS intersection a few years ago, and have worked a lot with active Mormons who want to stay in the church. And that's kind of been my main focus, is trying to work with people who do want to stay in the church, especially parents, but be good parents to their LGBT kids.
Okay. Tom?
My name's Tom Montgomery. My son came out 5 years ago. We are active members of the church, or were in 2012, and immediately became aware of his despair and suicidality at the age of 13. So we immediately seen that there was a causality in the culture and doctrine of Mormonism. We teamed up with the Family Acceptance Project in 2012, and we were in a movie called Families Are Forever. And that was the primary impetus that since that time, I've been involved at various levels of talking and speaking on the subject of from a parent's perspective, primarily, of learning to love and accept and help LGBT Mormons.
So why don't we start with the information that was shared in the article, Daniel, that you wrote, as far as some of the data around suicide rates, and if you could maybe explain a little bit of what the chart means and the trends that we're seeing in Utah in particular, and how you started writing your paper due to the numbers that are pretty dramatic and that we're really concerned about.
Yeah, well, this all actually goes back to a year ago, and the Montgomerys were pretty involved in all of what went down last year. It was just after the policy, there was just a lot of reports of suicides that were coming to the attention of Wendy Montgomery, especially Tom's wife. So all this news was kind of you know, going around, and then the Tribune came out and said, well, there can't be that many suicides, you know, and that kind of was annoying to me, because, and to the Montgomery, because we knew that there were. And so I just got together with Michael Barker, who kind of said, well, I want to look at the scientific evidence. And I said to him, well, there's a lot of scientific evidence we could look at. And so he and I compiled a really extensive review of all the literature and how we can use that to kind of look at the situation of LDS, LGBT people. So we did that article a year ago that really pointed out to all the reasons we thought that the suicide problem in Utah was exacerbated and possibly really driven by the LGBT LDS issue.
What article is that, Daniel?
This was 1 year ago in Rational Face, at the same blog where I just published this one.
Mm-hmm. It's called LGBT Mormon Crisis, Responding to the Empirical Research on Suicide.
Thank you.
And it was published February 25, 2016 at rationalface.org. The owner, the person who runs that blog, is the person who co-wrote this with me. And he also did a PDF copy that's actually on their homepage of that blog. So anyone can go there and look at it. Dialogue Magazine subsequently grabbed it from us. Well, we rewrote it for their sake to make it more academic. And it was published in Dialogue Magazine last fall. Benjamin Knoll did an extremely interesting statistical analysis afterwards that I'll talk about. But basically, while we were writing the article, it came to our attention that the youth suicide rate in Utah had tripled in 9 years and doubled in three. And that, I think, was the most compelling sort of find that, I mean, it wasn't us that found that. One of our, you know, one of the people we consulted with, you know, gave us this data and told us how to find it. And so we said, well, yeah, this is, youth suicide is a huge problem. And why is that the case? And why is Utah so particular in that way and seeing this dramatic rise in youth suicides in 3 years? And so, of course, my theory is and was that it was because of the increased hostile rhetoric that comes from our pulpits and in our communities, in our families, that is impacting our youth kind of disproportionately. And I kind of surmise that even though marriage equality is representing an improvement for gay people in general, the phenomena of younger people coming out and then meeting this hostility at a younger age is kind of unfortunately exposing them to a bigger risk. And especially when the hostilities kind of increased in some places. And then the data we got keeps coming in to support that idea. So we kind of came across a bunch of arguments. I don't know if you want me to go into those right now, because this is kind of from my article from a year ago, but we basically summarized, you know, a bunch of points that we consider direct evidence, another bunch of points we consider indirect evidence, and then a whole bunch of points as to why we think we need to pay attention to the anecdotal evidence, especially the kind that the Montgomerys were getting, where they were having people tell them, yeah, we know of these suicides, and we see people attempting suicide right and left around us. And so we felt like this was a pretty important body of information to put out there, and we got the feedback that it was, and that they had enlightened the subject a lot. And it got some attention. It got some mentions in the press as a reference, and Doug Fabrizio, you know, noticed in Dialogue, and he asked me to interview with him last fall. So anyway, and the whole process, I have to say, the Montgomerys were also always part of my discussions, and they helped me proofreading the article, and of course I had to comment on the situation of what had happened with them too. And so this is just one of many projects that they helped me with over the years and that we've collaborated on. So a year has gone by, and we had that statistic of the doubling of the suicides in 3 years that was so compelling, and the tripling in nine. And so we just wanted to know what had happened in with a New Year's data that we got a few weeks ago from the CDC. The Center for Disease Control tracks suicides in all states and causes of death actually in all states. And you can get that data And you can get the data in very specific ways. So it's really easy to go in there and ask the website, what was the suicide for any particular age range, any particular year, any particular state or region, and even other questions like what race or what gender of the people who died from suicide. And so we thought, yeah, it's going to be really interesting. We have this huge concern, and what happened in 2015, which is the new year that we have. That data is always one full year behind. So now we're just barely getting 2015. And the bad news is that it's worse. You know, the suicides went up even higher. So we already had these amazing astronomically high numbers in 2014. And what we saw in 2015 was just an increase. So I just did some amount of look at the data. I'm not a statistician, but Tom and I were both looking at it on our own and kind of looking at it. And what jumped out at me was that we did have that the line for the 12 to 21 year olds just keeps going up in the same direction. So it's just heading for the sky. And it's not only did it double and triple, but it's also beyond double the national rate. The national rate is just creeping up slowly, you know, but nothing, you know, that alarming. But the Utah rate is just going up at this really, really fast scale. And so I kind of also looked at the other age groups, and the CDC just naturally groups them by age groups of 5 years. So they go 10 to 14 and 15 to 19 and so on up. And so I just looked at every single group, and it turned out that every single group except for one had a dramatic increase, which means more than 10% increase in suicides between 2014 and 2015. So every single age group up until age 50 had an increase of more than 10%. The only exception to that was the age group of age 15 to 19. They didn't have an increase. They just stayed flat. They stayed at the same rate as their astronomically high rate from 2014. So they didn't go down. And in that particular five-year segment, they didn't go up. But if you take into account the whole realm of teenagers, what happened was that the ones who were from 12 to 14 went up dramatically, and the ones just in that year. I mean, you can't, you know, focus on very small groups because it gets more and more inaccurate. But the bigger group you make it, the more the data is reliable. But so we added in a couple years below and a couple years above, and really took in all the teens and the college age kids, which is 12 to 21. And that group, if you compare 2014 and 2015, you do see the line just keep going up and the suicides being really high. And the trend that this really came on, this dramatic acceleration in the rate of growth, came on in the past few years.
Do either of you know if we have any data on, I mean, it's definitely noticeable to me that the increase in rhetoric around LGBTQ issues at church has gone up exponentially, right? So ever since the church has been fighting marriage equality. So just like it seems like every general conference, every talk, there's lots and lots of themes about family values, the family proclamation, and then, of course, fighting against gay marriage, so all of which is anti-LGBTQ rhetoric. Is there any data to show how much that has increased in these years that we see the increase in suicide as well?
There's no one able to track that data. I suppose someone, you know, if some, you know, ambitious person out there wants to do a study of keywords in general conference talks, they might be able to just say, well, how many times have these things been brought up? But we know that, you know, when the marriage equality fight came to Utah, it was the end of 2013, so the start of 2014. And it had been here already, but 2014 was a really bad year, and 2014 was that year that these events were going on in Utah. And then in 2015, it got even worse when the Supreme Court did make marriage equality the law of the entire country, and that's when the church released a statement that was read in every congregation, and that same year the policy came out. And so, yeah, it's fresh in our memories that there were general conference talks all during that time causing heartache among the LGBT Mormons. And we can only imagine that these conversations were happening in local congregations and in families as well. And so the impact of that on younger people was easy to assume, but of course we can't exactly know. That's a question that we can't really answer exactly right now. I discuss in my article just the impact of being in a hostile community on suicide rates, and that part is pretty clear that communities with high levels of tolerance have much lower suicidal rates and much better mental health indexes in all areas, not just for LGBT people, but for all teens. So all teens living in these more tolerant communities that do protect LGBT rights, actually the benefit extends beyond just the LGBTQ teens, but also helps all teens.
Yeah.
And the same with schools that have programs that focus on protecting LGBTQ people from bullying. They actually, all the kids benefit and have lower suicide rates. But we also find with adults, there's lower death rates in these communities. So there's just all kinds of compelling data that shows that the tolerant environments, there's much healthier for LGBTQ people. As I mentioned in my recent article, they just realized that states that legalize same-sex marriage tended to see a drop in their suicide attempts among LGBTQ teens. And so that's talking about the early states. This isn't talking about when the federal government forced it upon them, but when these states individually made the decision either by ballot or by legislative action or sometimes by court action to legalize gay marriage. In each of those states, they saw an immediate improvement in suicide rate among the teens. Unfortunately, Utah didn't seem to work that way, partly because how it came about and what it did to the climate in Utah and the way it affected our teens. I'm guessing. I mean, like I say, we're looking at the data and we're trying to explain why. And this is just one obvious issue that's really jumping out at us. I'm not saying it's the only issue. There could be other issues that we're blind to right now. But we have to say this has got to be part, if not all of what's driving this increase that's so dramatic and so alarming.
Right.
And so I'll just point out that Tom, he can tell you more, but he had also prepared an article. You know, mine was just full of stats, but his was really more about talking about how it impacted them in a personal way. And he's also, they've talked to so many people who've been suicidal, so that his insights were really, really important. So that's why it seemed like such a great idea to put these both out at the same time, even though they were in different blogs.
You know, the one thing I'd add to what Daniel was saying, and you know, you guys mentioned general conference addresses as kind of the flashpoint of rejection. I would also contend that it's also because the rhetoric is seeping down into the weekly observance. I think of, you know, my wife last year, the proclamation was the theme of the Relief Society. So every month,
that's right,
you know, when they came into the house, that was the theme. That's what they talked about. In primary, a couple of years ago, I remember my kids, instead of scripture and prayer, it was proclamation and prayer. And they would read a line out of the proclamation and then have a prayer.
That's right.
And, you know, the proclamation is very much a idealized document that holds up one way to God, one way to be happiness, one way to family. And almost by design, well, definitely by design, is exclusive of same-sex families and LGBT people. There's no way to read that and as an LGBT person and not come away with, I don't fit in this at all. And so that has seeped into the correlated teaching week in and week out in church. So it's a lot more than just, you know, once every 6 months, and of course we go over conference addresses in church
every week,
all year long.
Yes.
So it's not just the general conferences. There's really no way that a young kid raised in the church, when they hit puberty, doesn't know that being gay means I don't fit at all in the plan of salvation and in the plan that Mormonism presents.
And that the options that we present as possibilities are so extreme and dire, which is basically either celibacy or having opposite sex mixed relationships, which is not conducive to somebody who has a homosexual orientation, that it really leaves people so hopeless. And we know that that's a huge part of suicidality, is this idea of hopelessness and unworthiness, right? So both of those are big time factors for our LGBTQ, both youth and I think adults as well.
For sure.
So Tom, can you speak a little bit to this dynamic that Daniel's talking about, where your family was really approached by so many people who had suicides in their extended families? And just to give a little bit of context, oftentimes suicides are difficult to understand, are difficult to figure out. It's not like everybody leaves a note explaining exactly the reasons why. One of the trends that I do think that we have noticed is that when there are LGBTQ people who lose their lives to suicide, the extended family tends to either not draw that correlate. In other words, they won't necessarily tell the public or people like at the funeral they were LGBTQ plus. And often even suicide in of itself is not talked about. So it may not even be clear to people that that was the cause that the life was lost to begin with. So can you talk a little bit about some of the pushback that you received as you and Wendy received these reports and what that was like for you?
Well, Wendy and I have been involved in this. Like I said, we put together a film with the Family Acceptance Project in 2012, which kind of put us as a, it got us known in the LGBT community, specifically the Mormon LGBT community, as people who are supportive, people who understand, people who you can reach out to. We became very involved in various LGBT Mormon groups, even founding groups. My wife founded, was one of the founders of Mama Dragons, is on the board of Affirmation, all sorts of things that increased our access in the community. And so kind of on a national, but, you know, primarily in the Jello Belt of the West, we get all sorts of communication from people who are in the circumstance of negotiating being in the church, from kids who are just coming out and going through puberty, and suddenly they're identifying their attractions as something that's completely incompatible with what they've known and learned their whole life. And that has a consequence of salvation. I mean, in Mormonism, we link everything from baptism to a temple marriage as necessary for salvation. So when a child comes out and recognizes that I don't fit the heteronormative, I don't fit a white picket fence family in Mormonism, it is earth shattering in that this is something that has consequences for the entirety of their life, consequences for their eternal family that they're a part of. I remember speaking with Caitlin Ryan, who is the director of the Family Acceptance Project, and because she's not a member of the church. And I asked her why she started with Mormonism on her faith-based work for suicide prevention. And for her, it goes back to the AIDS epidemic. She was a nurse and in support groups in Atlanta at the time. And she said there was nothing more devastating. The most devastating experience she ever saw was a young Mormon kid who was dying. And his parents didn't find out till he was on his deathbed, flew down to Atlanta. And she said it wasn't even the fact that he was dying. It was the worst news of all was because of AIDS and that he was gay. And that it broke their eternal family. And she saw a level of trauma that she'd never observed before. The loss was so much more intense. It was, you lost your eternal salvation. And the family was just broken. You were torn away from your family. And it inspired her so much at that point to start doing this faith-based suicide work and starting with Mormonism. You know, since 2012, you look at those numbers that Daniel's talking about, and Wendy and I speak about it anecdotally that we're having all these conversations, we're observing all of these people going through trauma, and all it can be amounted to is anecdotal, which is tragic, because no one's listening because of the religious and political implications of it. And so we'll come out and be dismissed, get hammered that we're anti or against the church. And then the next year, the CDC numbers will come out and they're higher. They're exponentially higher. And we'll come out and we'll say something and it'll get pawned off as altitude or kids watch too much screen time in Utah. And that's why suicide numbers are going up. And we get dismissed for another year. And then another year comes out. And now we're at 2017, but we're just getting 2015 numbers. But no one's willing to listen to the anecdotal stories. It's a direct story in hundreds and thousands of people's lives that I hear all the time.
Can I point out that the Montgomerys aren't the only ones hearing these stories? There's other people in similar positions who are kind of high profile. Will tell you the same thing, that they're getting emails every day from people who are suicidal. And this wonderful family, the McIntoshes, who just released that video, she's had to deal with tons of suicidal young men. And she talked about that on Facebook, the sadness that's caused her. There's a lot of people in positions like the Montgomerys who are having the same experience. So I call it anecdote because that's a descriptive word, not to belittle it, but just to say that's why we have to take the anecdotal information into account, because we're getting a lot of reports. A lot of people are reporting it. We're getting a mass of these anecdotal reports that means we have to draw, does have to draw our attention.
Well, and it's sorry, tragic that the anecdotal piece of it is what a lot of people use to dismiss this as real research, right? And I can second or third your experiences as a mental health professional and also working with the Mormon Mental Health Association and with many other LDS mental health professionals or people who work with LDS clientele, that this is a trend that we are all aware of and that we are all experiencing in our practices.
That's anecdotal, but it's important. It's compelling.
Exactly.
It's becoming massive.
And when you connect, and this is the importance of Daniel's article in particular, when you connect all of this anecdotal that's all pointing to a specific causality and you combine it with direct evidence, you have all this CDC, we've got a suicide epidemic. That's not the question. The question is, what's the causality? But when you combine it with all of the anecdotal evidence, all of this experience, all of the direct evidence, all of the indirect evidence. I mean, that's the thing. And no one's overstating what the evidence is. It's all extremely compelling. I don't know how it doesn't just cause a panic and doesn't cause a substantial response within Utah's community that this is a red flag for causality.
Well, like Bob Reese said the other night at the All Arizona meeting, if we had this many deaths due to a serial killer or a virus, or we saw this type of increase due to an illness, we would all be very concerned, up in arms, you know, about research and making sure that we're putting in safety measures for people. And it's just fascinating the silence that we see on this particular issue.
Well, my experience in having the conversation with people who are on the, I guess on the, you would say on the other side, who want to dismiss this evidence, is they will attribute it to everything in the world, anything and everything possible, but that it has a religious causality.
It's not just the youth who are killing themselves. The suicide rate does go up to age 50. Every age group is seeing this dramatic increase, and it's not as exponential as the youth. The youth is clearly worse, but the adult group aged 22 to 50 is still more than double the national rate. And they've also seen a near doubling in the past 10 years. And you can really see it tick up. If you look at the graph, you can see the trend going up in 2009, starting around then. And so it's kind of a compelling year that right after we started Prop 8, you know, we started seeing the despair in the LGBT community go up. So I just want to point out that this is more global. And I also want to point out that the research, Caitlin Ryan, as you discussed on the Family Acceptance Project that Tom and Wendy have been involved in, the research shows that the risk for suicide goes up from family rejection. And that's really important because the family rejection is the sort of the end manifestation of community rejection. And so all of these things add up to mean, you know, the child is feeling more rejected by his family, by behaviors that the family often doesn't know they're doing. And often the family doesn't know that there's a gay child hearing these things. But I want to point out that the risk of suicide is higher, but there's also risk of other things that's higher, including HIV infection, drug abuse and addiction. And the elevated suicide rate doesn't go away when they suddenly reach adults. No, the rejected child ends up being at risk of suicide for the rest of their life. So what we're seeing is a morbidity that extends well into adulthood and probably up to, you know, age 50, and that it's clearly impacted by the family rejection, which if you look at the points that is identified in the research, it includes a lot of things that people don't really realize are rejecting behaviors on the part of the family. But it's the attitudes they express about LGBT people often become, they're felt as rejection by the child whose family doesn't even know that the child is gay often. And so that's why it becomes so toxic when you have the negative discussions going on in church and those discussions end up happening at home and are reinforced in the homes. But I just want to point out that there's more than that. Community rejection is also pretty toxic, and we've seen that. And the statistics on mental health outcomes are really bad when there's community rejection. An anecdote I have is, you know, someone I know who I love dearly who killed themselves. That stage in their life, they didn't have the family rejection, but the family was a loss of what they could do to provide for this child who was being rejected by his community. And that kind of thing just ends up leading to so many problems. They don't have the supports, they don't have the scouts, they don't have the mutual, they don't have a supportive community at school, and that's so much easier to get involved in drugs and other things, and then the drugs kill them. So you can say that, no, it's not LGBT, it's the drugs, but the reason they're doing the drugs is they're of the rejection from being LGBT. And you can't say, well, you know, when someone gets HIV, which puts them at more risk of suicide, it's, once again, the rejection leads to these behaviors that make them more mentally unhealthy. And so you can say, well, guns cause the suicide, altitude causes suicide. But yeah, of course, guns and drugs cause the suicide, but they wouldn't have used the guns in the first place, or they wouldn't have been using the drugs if they were sort of had a healthier mental health to start with. And so we shouldn't say it wasn't the altitude. We shouldn't say it wasn't the guns. Obviously, it was the guns. Obviously, it was the untreated depression. Obviously, it was a myriad of things that lead to these suicides. But there's a factor that puts them at risk for all of the things that lead to the suicides. And furthermore, even if there were no suicides, all of those things are reflections of morbidity, or they're reflections of human despair. There is public health measures that try to address people's health so that people can live healthy and happily. So even if there were no problem with suicide, we should still address these obviously public health issues such as depression and drug abuse that are coming out of the same thing, which is the rejection. Or suicide attempts. We could say, well, maybe there's more suicide attempts, but not more actual suicides. And, you know, that's an interesting question. But the only thing we can do to get anybody's attention is look at the suicides. Well, the suicides are bad enough without it. But even if we eliminate that as an issue, we shouldn't be eliminating looking at the health of these young people and how that's impacting them many years later. So
right,
if that'll make sense, I hope.
Sure, no, for sure. And then I would add too that, I mean, if you're in your late 30s, 40s, and 50s, you probably grew up in the era in Mormonism where heterosexual marriage was very much encouraged. I see many of those people. I always have like maybe 3 to 5 mixed orientation marriages in my docket at any given time, where that also, you can see the increase in suicidality in those cases of mine as well, because of the extreme conflict and contradictions that people are having to live in their day-to-day lives when they very much love their spouses, love their children, and yet are in constant conflict with themselves. That direction has just recently shifted in the church, like I would say in the last maybe 10 or 15 years. And even then, it hasn't really completely trickled down, because I still hear instances where inexperienced bishops or other leaders will still give advice that leads to heterosexual marriage. So it's, you know, it's just a really big problem overall in that regard as far as the age. And I agree that once these risks are there, it's just, they're kind of there. There's a lot of interesting research coming out of the ACE study as far as traumatic childhood adverse experiences that have an impact for the rest of your life. And so, yeah, these are really problematic, big time issues that people are having to deal with. And it's just infuriating sometimes to hear some of the ways that people, like you're saying, dismiss. So if we can just kind of return to that, you've got, well, you can't just blame a church, you know, for people's choices around suicide, which even that's a little bit infuriating how people talk about the choice, which really underestimates mental health concerns. Or they'll say, well, you just can't correlate to that. It's much more complicated than just one issue. You can't know why people lose their lives to suicide. Yeah, things that you've mentioned already, like altitude, or, well, you know, Colorado also has a high suicide rate, so that's not a super Mormon state, so how do you explain that? I mean, so you hear all of these ways that people...
Well, there's plenty of Mormons in Colorado, but
yes,
there's other states with high suicide rates, so we shouldn't use that as an excuse to ignore our own. Colorado's also seems a dramatic increase, but it doesn't mean we should say, oh, well, the same thing's happening there that's happening here, and it's obviously not Mormonism. Well, I don't think that's a fair assertion at all. He found there was a statistical correlation between the rate of increase of youth suicide and the population of Mormons within that state, that basically any state that had a Mormon population had a increase in their youth suicide rate comparable to the portion of Mormons in that state.
What research is this? I'm sorry.
Okay, so after Michael and I published that article a year ago, Benjamin Knoll looked at the CDC stats, and he published an article that subsequently went into Rational Face and also into Dialogue magazine. And what it showed was that the increased rate of youth suicide was not a national phenomenon. It was kind of mainly a Utah phenomenon, but the other states that had Mormon populations also saw an increase in their youth suicides that was proportional to the amount of Mormons in the state. So if they had a 10% Mormons in that state, they had a rate of increase that was only, that was still there, but it was only 10% compared to Utah, or, you know,
interesting.
I guess it'd be only 1/5 as big as Utah, where it's 50% Mormon. So he just noticed that this correlation extended into other states with Mormon populations, which is kind of, you know, compelling that would be evident. And he also showed that there was no correlation before 2009. So that correlation emerged both in Utah and in other states with Mormon populations, that they would have an increase in youth suicide if they had a Mormon population there and proportional to the Mormon population in that state.
Fascinating. Thank you.
Yeah.
And you can send me the link to that then as well.
Yeah, that's also on the face page, the home page of the RationalFace.blog. Okay. But if you want the original RationalFace article, yeah, it's under the date, but they have a PDF version on there, and that's also in Dialogue Magazine.
Okay.
Became an author on our Dialogue article because we needed a scholarly author who was capable of putting it in the right ways for that. Like I say, I don't want to blame it on Mormonism per se. I just want to look at every element that's contributing to these and try to look for solutions. And I'm hoping that they are. You know, I believe that maybe there is some slow awakening going on. Or, you know, the Mormon newsroom just released this wonderful video of the McIntoshes, which is a fantastic family and a good example to Mormons, and showed them having a very loving response to their son who has left the church and who is going to marry a man. I didn't say that in the video, but it's clear that they're accepting him even though he's choosing a path that's not the standard Mormon path. And so this is a healthy sort of role model that didn't require doctrinal change. And then also the Utah legislature. We all know that the Utah legislature doesn't pass anything that the Mormon church doesn't want them to pass. But last week, they just made this wonderful, you know, legislative effort to get rid of the what was called the No Promo Homo law, which was the law that was preventing school counselors and teachers from addressing any issues of their LGBT kids might have around that, because they weren't allowed to discuss it or even name it in school, which was also one of the things exacerbating the, you know, suicide problem among our youth, is that the schools were really too hostile. And so this was one step in removing that school hostility. It was just a very prudent and obvious and logical step, but they had to do it. And there's some states who haven't, right? So this was a great thing that finally happened, right? And we know our, you know, everybody knows that the Utah legislature doesn't do it unless the church is basically okay with it. So I have sort of two little hopeful points this week. You know, it's coming too slow, but I hope that maybe someone's listening.
We took the long road home, turned minutes into miles. And as the evening traveled on, the sunset bathed your smile. We stopped beneath the desert stars, wrapped in each other's arms. Was as simple as I love you, an ordinary, extraordinary truth.
It's been a long road here, a trail with tears, pain and sorrow too.
But through every storm we traveled on, like lovers do. And if sometimes we fell apart, we always came back home. Was as simple as I love you, an ordinary, extraordinary.
Thank you.
Some people say, love is blind, and forever it's too long. But I see your eyes in every sunrise. Can't imagine life alone. Let's take a long road on together until we're gone. Won't you by my side till the day I die and into the beyond? It's as simple as our love is. That's how I wanna go, all wrapped up in the arms of our extraordinary, it's nothing ordinary love. Ordinary. No, it's extraordinary.